What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. It wasn't considered a serious problem until two shootings at Columbine High School changed that. They went on a shooting rampage that killed 13 and left dozens injured before turning their guns on themselves. It was the worst incident of school violence in the history of the United States. But it wasn't the last. Charles Andrew Williams, 15, decided to get back at his tormentor at Santana High School in Santee, California. He fatally shot two people and wounded 13 others. A common thread between these violent attacks was bullying. Now we have students returning to school, and even though it's an exciting time, it can be a nerve-wracking time for kids who have been targeted by bullies. How can you tell if your child is being bullied, and what can you do about it? Dr. Deborah Sandella addresses the effects of bullying on this edition. Dr. Sandella, welcome to 411 Teen.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Liz. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, glad to have you. Why is bullying such a problem?
Well, you know, I think that that's an interesting question. Why? I'm not sure I can answer why. I can say that, you know, violence between people, of course, has been around since the beginning of time. And we certainly have a lot of violent images in our culture today through video games and movies and television. And we know that the brain has these mirror cells, actually, where we're designed to imitate things we see. So, you know, we have that going on. Mm-hmm. And then we have kids having more freedom, I would say, that there's not as much supervision probably with both parents working as maybe there used to be. And so there's such an opportunity to express our insecurities in either bullying or being bullied. It's kind of like the opposite ends of that time in junior high and high school, especially when we're very insecure and trying to find out who we are, trying to, you know, sense where we belong in the world. And so it shows up, I think, as bullying.
Do you feel it's on the increase, or is it that we're just more are tuned in and more aware of it? Because you see it everywhere.
Right. I think it's both,
okay.
Honestly. I think we definitely are more tuned in, and the level of the kind of violence, because, you know, I live in Denver, Colorado, so I was here when Columbine happened, and I actually had children, young children. So, you know, I think that the frequency, the level of the violence has been increasing. And, of course, you know, with the media, we do know more of what's happening everywhere. So, you know, however, I really think there is a greater increase as well.
Having worked with clients and patients who directly experience the Columbine, or the, I guess, massacre, What have you seen? What are you most likely to see as far as parents are concerned with that kind of experience?
Well, one of the things that can easily happen, and actually I've seen it with the teachers as well, that and the people who responded, it's like everybody involved, the first responders, the teachers, the students, the bully's family, everybody is impacted by these kinds of experiences. And what can happen is the whatever our emotion at the time, there is such intensity of it that it gets stuck in the body, and it doesn't just naturally go away on its own, like a lot of situations will just dissolve. You know, we'll have intense emotion, and it'll just naturally dissolve and go away with time. What I've seen with bullying at this level particularly, that it doesn't just go away. And so you really want to work with it so that the long-term effects can be dissolved and disrupted.
Dr. Sandella, share with us exactly what bullying behavior involves. Now, I know it can be on all levels. It can be physical. It can be emotional. It can be verbal. It can be cyberbullying now. But if you would share, you know, for the listening audience, so we know exactly what is bullying behavior.
Well, I think that the quality of what we call bullying is when there's one person that is being aggressive and frequently is larger physically. Mm-hmm. It's not uncommon for the bully to be larger physically, and that's one of the reasons that it's easy to fall into expressing that way, particularly for boys. Now, with girls, it's much more of the mean girl talking mm-hmm. about each other, and size doesn't have to do with that. So that when there's an inequality in the communication and the exchange, so there's somebody trying to dominate another, is really the quality, I think, that we're talking about.
Okay. What type of people are bullies? Who are the bullies?
Well, I think it's really varied, mm-hmm. The full range. I think that what happens is kids that particularly are feeling insecure and may be large, they may not have as good of verbal skills or intellectual skills, and so they start acting out in a natural way to aggressively dominate another. And, when you've been around boys, particularly in junior high and high school, they're very physical. They really roughhouse.
Yeah.
So that's real natural
yeah,
way
that's
to express.
Not, yeah.
Yeah, and so one of the things that can happen also is when you have that kind of a child who gets frustrated and doesn't really know how to express his anger or to communicate what his needs are, then there can get to be this kind of acting out that mm-hmm. is impulsive and, is feeling good about themselves at the expense of another. So it's really all, we're really all trying to feel good about ourselves. And I think one thing that is important for both the bully and the person who's being bullied is to remember these are kids, too. Because when we remember they're kids, too, and they have their own insecurity, that can help us feel less afraid of them. Mm-hmm. And to see them in a more humane way, that they're really needing a lot of assistance. And parents and teachers really have a responsibility here to work with that person to provide a lot of supervision, setting limits, teaching them how to process their feelings, transfer their feelings into words. Because that's a skill not everybody gets right away. Some are better than others. And then the other skill that they frequently are lacking is empathy or compassion for others. So they don't have that ability to really imagine what the other person is thinking or feeling. And so mm-hmm. we really need to teach them that.
What impact does their home milieu or maybe even community milieu influence this bullying behavior? What impact does it have?
Well, it can. I think it all depends how parents
mm-hmm.
react.
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard stories both ways where a child's parents kind of refused to do anything and said, there's nothing wrong with my child. And probably, I was a bully with the child. The parent probably did some bullying with the child mm-hmm. in that kind of a situation. We could probably guess that. And then, I heard a story recently of a boy who was one of four brothers and had some disability, some intellectual disability, and was the largest. And so he was really displaying bullying behavior with others. And the mother stepped in and really started to be very clear that this was not okay, set the limits repeatedly, and provided the supervision to reinforce that learning, mm-hmm. and then also started, you know, to teach him how to, be caring, how that was not a caring thing for others. And it stopped. The bullying stopped. So we know intervention works. We just have to do it.
Yeah, we have to do it and also be consistent in doing
right,
it. Because
exactly.
I think that's one
yes.
of the problems. You know, parents right. may pick up on it and they may have an intervention a couple of times and then it stops or for whatever reason. And
uh-huh.
so they get right back into that behavior.
Right. Yeah, because it's very immediate gratification.
Mm-hmm.
So those kids that are the bullies usually have not learned how to delay gratification.
Exactly, right.
And so that's what we're really teaching them. And we know that takes, as you said, so adeptly, is that takes repeated
yeah.
experience where we really walk them through that until they get it, till we're really sure
mm-hmm.
that they have it.
And sometimes, you know, parents just aren't equipped to deal with it at all.
Well, yeah, I think you're exactly right, that there are parents who, they may even be scared of their own child
mm-hmm.
At times, or they just don't have those abilities verbally either. They may not have developed as much empathy or compassion.
Right.
And so they actually may treat their child in a way that doesn't teach those kinds of things. And so that's where I think friends, family, other parents of the bullied person can, continue to communicate in a compassionate way with them
mm-hmm.
so that they become open to receiving help. I think that's what, it's real important, you know, for us not to try to fight with a bully or with a parent of a bully, not to fight with them, because then we risk really stepping into being a bully ourselves. And in the research, the children who had been both a victim and a bully had the poorest mental health long-term effects of anyone. So it's important to interact and then to turn and disengage.
Can I ask you to hold your thoughts for a second? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program, and we are going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen is talking with Dr. Deborah Sandella, and she's sharing her expertise on bullying, giving us all types of suggestions and insights as to the bullying behavior. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield. Dr. Sandella, I had to interrupt you. Were there more thoughts that you wanted to share there?
Well, something that's really important I just want to make sure to say during this interview is one thing that really helps nip bullying early on is for the child and for parents to actually instruct their children about mm-hmm. this is to use their voice in a very mm-hmm. non-threatening way, yet they're still standing up for themselves by saying something. And then turn and walk away. And so things that kids have used that have worked before is something like, what's with that? Or that's,
mm-hmm.
that's mean.
Mm-hmm.
Or stop that. And then just turn and walk away. So that you set some kind of limit, and yet you're not going to engage to fight or make mm-hmm. an issue of it. And then you let it go. But you do that every time somebody bullies. You know, says something, picks on you. And that can really go a long way.
Well, aggressive behavior and bullying are very common, as we mentioned earlier, in the elementary and middle and senior high school ages. Some of the studies indicate, goodness, what, around 20% of all American children have been bullies, are bullying at some point in their development. Would you agree with that? They say bullying can range, it can range from teasing to stealing one's lunch money to intimidating, or it can be a group of students physically abusing a classmate. But it's about aggression.
Right, exactly. I would totally agree with that. I've heard similar statistics. And what's interesting is that the percentage of kids who acknowledge having bullied another is very equal to the percentage who have been bullied.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the reciprocity there, you know, you see the relationship, maybe is a better word for it. And yes, it is about aggression. And, you know, as these ages, there is a lot of not understanding how to manage our feelings, not understanding exactly how to manage the body as the hormones kick in, particularly in junior high and early high school, so that it is a time where kids are really, really vulnerable to it. What's sad, though, is, you know, because it's happening at that level, I've actually been seeing more bullying happening in the workplace with adults.
Mm.
And, you know, so it's like because we're not really intervening enough at the younger ages, then it's continuing. We're not really learning how to have civil communication with each other, how to listen and how to reflect and how to ask questions. And, you know, that, you know, as the kids learn that at these ages,
right,
how to communicate. Yeah.
And if they find that being aggressive, even verbally aggressive, works, and there's no intervention, then they continue. They're being reinforced by not having any intervention.
Completely. Oh, that is so true. In fact, I read a statistic that whenever someone, a teacher, a bystander, a parent, whomever, just steps into a situation where it's looking suspicious, like there either is bullying going on or it's heading that direction, merely by stepping in, there's something that the spell is broken, and more than half of the time, it dissolves within 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very powerful feedback for us.
Yes, it is. Do you make a distinction between what I guess would be called normal teasing and bullying? Is there a distinction?
You know, I think that is a hard one because there is, I mean, like I've actually worked with adult women who go back to their initial issue as basically being teased by an older brother. And that they just felt terrorized because his brother was old enough to be able to have a lot of control. And there was no intervention by the parents. So it's very hard to discern exactly what we call bullying and what we call teasing. What I would say is whenever the other person seems hurt or is not really enjoying it, is not laughing with you, if they're not laughing with you, then it is it's not playful teasing and it's hurtful teasing. And, you know, very sensitive kids can be wounded by hurtful teasing, even though it may not be the full-blown, like somebody's really trying to hurt them.
Getting into the head of the bully, does the bully set out or intend to engage in his or her bullying behavior, or is it accidental and it's something they fall into?
Well, you know, it's hard for me. I'm not really sure about how they initially become a bully. I don't haven't read anything about that or experienced it. What I would say is what I've seen is that there's a lack of patience, tolerance, so that it's a very quick response to wanting to look good, to be powerful. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. And certainly in our culture, there is a lot of that that goes on. So, you know, that we have a lot of interest in you know, being powerful and influential, and particularly with the unsophisticated, I want to say shaped mind of a child. Mm-hmm. They could certainly just act out to try and do that in the very quickest way possible for themselves. And so that wouldn't be the quickest way possible for all kids, because the level of sensitivity and the kind of response to feelings is very different, you know, with different kids, just like different people.
Well, we know that bullying has long and short-term effects,
right.
Physical and psychological effects throughout one's entire lifetime. At this point, could we look at some of the long and short-term physical effects of bullying?
Well, yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. So there was a study in 2013 that really looked at the long-term effects, and they found that the victims of bullying were four times as likely to have an anxiety disorder, and that the bullies had a greater than normal risk of becoming criminal or antisocial.
Exactly.
And that those who had done both, who had been a victim and also bullied, had like 15 times more likely to experience suicidal thoughts and actions and to have a panic attack disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So they really suffer the most, and that's why it is important, you know, to not become a bully if you've been bullied, to not try and fight your way out of it. Now, I think one thing that is important, and I didn't make this discernment earlier, and it's important, whenever there is a physical attack going on, we always immediately bring in help, you know, whatever that is, if it's the teacher, the police, you know, whomever. We don't ever want to allow physical harm to happen to another. So that's always an immediate response, and I want to be clear about that. That, you know, if there's physical harm happening,
of course,
you know, you want to go. It's an emergency.
Yes, indeed. What role do you see the school playing? Because we know a lot of bullying actually occurs on the school grounds. And
right.
that middle school period, you know, you've touched on it several times. The children are so very vulnerable at that stage.
Yes.
I think they're more vulnerable than they are even in high school.
Yes, I totally agree with you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just kind of like raw emotion.
Exactly.
At that point,
indeed.
You know. So, now ask me the question again, because I got distracted there.
Well, I did too, you know. But I was looking at bullying behavior and the impact. When we look at it, we know that the middle school child is so very, very vulnerable, and that a lot of this bullying behavior actually occurs at school. And so my question was really, what role should and does the school play?
Right. Well, it's an excellent question,
okay.
Dr. Liz. Yeah, because it does happen at school, and at those ages,
mm-hmm.
kids don't frequently come home and tell their parents because it's, you know, they're getting big enough, old enough, and especially boys who are less verbal at that age anyway. They tend not to talk about it, but they may just start acting and out in, you know,
mm-hmm.
unusual ways, so that parents know something's up. There is a problem in that schools have not been as active, in my opinion, as they could be. I know just in Denver this year, we had a high school where the senior girls, did a walkout and brought the press in because they said the senior boys were cyberbullying them.
Mm.
with sexual harassment, and that they had told the school, and the school wasn't doing anything. And so this did get the school's attention.
I bet it did.
Yes, which was great. I loved it, actually,
yes.
That the girls had that you know, feistiness and strength and courage to do that. So that I think that schools have been afraid. They've really been afraid because it's been sometimes hard to identify, like, well, even in, you know, identifying violent potential in the mental health area has been a difficult area. Like, you know, mental health people or professionals are taught how to evaluate suicidal potential. You know, evaluating violence potential has been much harder, which we saw also in our experience with the theater shooting with James Holmes in a couple of years ago. That it's you know, there was some suggestion that he was violent, and yet it was very hard to actually detain him, given the way things are. And I think that's what schools have run up against. And personally, this is my personal opinion, I think that, because I have worked in schools before, that I think that at this time it's better to err on the side of safety than to worry about, you know, something else. It's like, can you live with yourself if you've had some indication there was an issue and you didn't do anything and somebody really got hurt or killed? So I think schools really are being called to greater action. I read another case online, you know, of a young boy who killed himself who was being bullied, and the school really didn't intervene or do anything.
Yeah, well, and that's often the case, that the schools aren't doing anything, or they, you know, teachers will tell children that they need to deal with it, you know.
Right.
That's
it's so crazy, because that whole belief that, oh, this is just normal growth, it's not.
It's not normal. It's extreme.
No, definitely.
Anything that goes to the extreme is not normal.
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
so.
Well, what is your experience? I'm just curious, because it sounds like you've had some experiences, too. Have you seen that with schools? Have you had some experiences?
I have seen that schools are very slow to respond. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why they're slow to respond, but that they don't want to, or they feel ill-equipped to address that type of behavior. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, you know, if maybe teachers aren't trained, because sometimes you'll see bullying behavior and teachers will not identify it. And I don't say that as something negative on teachers, just that they may not see it as bullying behavior, which is why I asked earlier, what role does the family or one's culture or one's milieu play in forming this type of behavior in the first place? I mean, if you're in an environment that you have to be, you have to get your swag on, so to speak, and you got to be macho, and you at least got to look that way or present that way, like you're really virile and you're not playing. How does that influence your behavior and how you deal with others? If you're trying to be persuasive, if you're trying to get something, do you find that you will use that kind of behavior? Whereas, you know, I remember my parents saying, you know, you catch more with honey than you do with vinegar, okay? So, but that's not the case today. Nobody uses any honey, okay? You know, they use hot sauce.
Yes, exactly. Yes, I'm of that generation. I'm of the honey generation.
Right. Right. So that's not what's happening. That's not what we see. And as we talk,
it really isn't.
Mm-mm.
And I do agree with you that in my experience, that's all I can speak to, in my experience, the teachers have not been trained. And I think that they feel that this is like a mental health issue and that's out of their realm. Even if they do see it.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think teachers are very well trained of how to teach their content subject. And they're less trained about relational communication issues, you know, in the classroom or between students, or even with parents, that, and I think that would be really useful to have more of that, probably. And I suppose teachers also could ask the, you know, all of them usually have social workers and psychologists now on the staff somewhere in the district, to ask for assistance from those people if they feel unqualified or unable to intervene, if they see something that looks fishy, to bring them in. And, you know, really, I think that that statistic about how bullying really dissipates it within 10 seconds when anybody stands, just walks in and says, "Hey, what's happening?"
Right.
You know, that's you don't have to be qualified to do that.
Right. But you have to know to do it, because we have so many bystanders who see what's going on, but they do not intervene. And if they just said something, even, you know, that would make a big difference. But, you know, and I that's why I asked about the schools, because I think there are things that maybe they could have assemblies. There's something that they can do, not only with the bully, but the bystanders, saying, if you see a child being abused like this, or if you see someone talking to your friend or talking to your classmate in this manner, say something. You know, and I, just something as simple as that, as you and I both know, will make a big difference.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a conversational forum for teens and other interested folks. We're going to take a break, but we'll return shortly. What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and my guest this hour is Dr. Deborah Sandella. Dr. Sandella is sharing with us again tidbits, insights, interventions, all about bullying behavior. Dr. Sandella, I had to interrupt you again, but you can continue.
Okay. That's okay. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, now I have to remember what I'm continuing on. Sorry.
Well, as I always tell folks, it will come back. So, that's not a problem. But while you're remembering, would you share with parents and other listening audience behaviors to look for, indicators that a child may be abused or bullied?
Bullied, yes. So because when we're immobilized as a victim, when we feel like a victim, the body releases stress hormones to help us take action to protect ourselves. Mm-hmm. And when we're not able to take action, then it gets turned inward on the body. So that causes stomach aches and headaches and anxiety. And so those are things to watch for. And, of course, kids that start becoming very nervous, very anxious, and don't want to go to school is a real strong sign. And the most, you know, most parents hopefully really understand their child and what they look like when they're stressed. And so if they start noticing that, but there's nothing happening overtly that they can see, to really inquire and ask and very gently and compassionately explore what their life is like right now. Because kids don't want to be interrogated. So that's important to remember.
That's true. That's true. That is very true. Getting back to the bystander and the bully himself or herself, first, I guess my question is, why don't victims, and I think we've touched on this, but why don't victims stand up or confront their bullies?
Right. Oh, yes. Now I remember the point you just hit on it. that because bullying has now so much attention, and using the word bullying is very strong. And I think that kids get really scared, whether they're the victim or they're a student who witnesses bullying. Mm-hmm. They get very scared because there's this, it's almost like the bullying tends to create the idea that there's a, kind of a monster and then the victim. And I think we start to overproject the strength onto the victim, onto the bully, mm-hmm. which is why it's really useful to remember, hey, they're just a scared kid, too, really. They just are acting it out by being aggressive. And so that we can start dispelling the fear of bullies so that we'll take action more quickly.
Okay. I guess I wonder, how does one avoid being exposed to this bullying behavior? Because when you think about it, it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's everywhere. It's in the cartoons. It's in their movies.
Right.
you know, you see them, the hero or the heroine picking on lesser individuals, those who may be weak or those who may be sick. Those mm-hmm. are the ones that are often that are despised. And at a certain level, couldn't parents just say, well, you know, the kids are simply imitating these values, and these are the values, unfortunately, that seem to get a lot of attention, let me put it that way, whether you are a child or an adult.
Right. It's exactly right. I think that's true. And so, you know, for those of us that are awake and aware of how it can be different, I think there is a responsibility to be the teacher and to role model that, you know, we have humanity. We are in humanity, and humanity is in the process of evolving to better and better selves. And so we want to remember that and not, you know, just mm-hmm. collapse into the lowest denominator here.
Right.
I know I ran into that when my kids are 32 and 25 now, mm-hmm. but when they were in junior high and high school, I remember needing to really speak up with them and their friends, you know, about values, really.
Right. And I think... Go right ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Yeah, that is real important, but that gets me right back to what we were talking about earlier and looking at one's culture and looking at one's milieu. Because when we get into the values, where does that come from?
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, I don't know that there's any answer to that, you know, but you have to be, I think, teachers and school personnel have to be sensitive, cognizant of really the environment that these children are coming from, that their school, you know, the children that the school serves.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that it's right, but I think that, you know, we might really need to teach them how, you know, the bilingual child. Well, we might need to teach them that they have to have two or three different hats or two or three different types of ways of handling things depending on where they are.
Exactly. I totally agree with you, Dr.
Okay.
Liz.
Okay.
That it is that we have a responsibility to teach, you know.
Right.
They're kids, they're learning, they're the next generation that's growing up. And so we don't have to just live with it. I think we can role model and teach a better way, a more compassionate. And I think part of what we're teaching is compassion and caring about others in addition to ourselves. And that, you know, some children are born with that naturally. I've seen that.
Yeah, that's true.
And others are not. They have to be taught.
Well, you know, I keep thinking about just what's going on in this environment today.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just even here, just in our own environment, I mean, the United States alone, I mean, I look at the political campaigns, and doesn't matter not whether you're Democrat, Republican, but look at the rhetoric. Listen to the rhetoric.
Yeah.
What are you saying? What message are you sending to these kids?
Right. I totally agree with you. It's definitely there. And so to stand, you know, we have to have the courage.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we're asking the teachers and the students to have to stand up and do something different.
Exactly.
And to value something different and to enact it, take action on it, teach it, that we too are being called to do that. You can't just go with the drift.
Right.
You know?
And it's interesting how you get a child to that point, to the point that he or she feels comfortable within themselves to be able to stand up and say, I don't like that.
Right.
I don't like that. You
know? Exactly.
No, I'm not going to give you my lunch money. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to feel like I can go and tell whomever, the teacher, the principal, the resource officer, that this is going on and not be worried about the repercussions of it, what I'm going to be called, how I'm going to be perceived. Are you feeling me? You know where I'm coming from?
Yeah. Yes, I really do. And mm-hmm. so something that parents can do, and teachers could do it too, although I doubt they would venture into it, but in some of the work I've done with adolescents, mm-hmm. is to really assist them in creating their own inner safety that can withstand those outside of them being intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really a wonderful thing to start feeling safe in yourself, even as adults. You know, I mean, I think that's probably throughout life, too. That inner safety is probably the biggest thing that gets all of us into trouble, or a lack of it. And so to really help a child access their inner resources is really helpful. And
mm-hmm.
you know, one of the ways that I've done that, and it's probably not a commonly used, but it's a more using imagination to
okay.
create a sense of safety. So I actually worked with a young woman who was developmentally disabled and was being picked on by a couple of boys whenever she walked down the hall.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we did is in her imagination with her eyes closed, I asked her to imagine being in that hallway with them and what would help her feel safe. Like, what would that
mm-hmm.
look like to feel safe here? And so she really, you know, because kids have a lot of imagination as they're young. And she really got into it. She goes, well, I think a great big pink bubble around me that protects me.
Okay.
You know, and then it's like, and it has a Bose system in it that plays my favorite music.
Oh, she got elaborate,
and,
didn't she?
Yeah, and then I asked her, well, would you like to have somebody with you? And she said, yes, I want my mom. And so she imagined her mom as a little figure on her left shoulder, whispering in her ear how much she loved her and, you know, how safe she was. And so what happened is we then practiced her imagining that as she walked down the hall and these boys were over there, but she couldn't even hear them talking.
Mm-hmm.
Because her
mm-hmm.
music was so loud.
If it worked. If it worked, that's what's important.
Yeah, exactly. It worked. And they quit bothering her because they weren't getting a reaction.
Mm-hmm. They weren't getting that reaction. In
yeah.
these last few minutes, I have 1,000 questions I want to ask you. But first of all, do you have any insights or particular suggestions that you would share with parents who may have children who are bullies?
You know, I think what we've said probably bears repeating.
Yeah.
You know, to always make sure that they let their child know they're loved, that they love them.
Mm-hmm.
And out of this love, that they're needing to, you know, be very, very clear that it's not okay to hurt or harm another person, whether it's hurt their feelings or physically, you know, in any way, harm them or threaten them, and that will be interrupted and there will be, you know, repercussions, you know, what do you call that, consequences, and that that be really consistently done with love, yet firmly, over a period of time is really important. So the love is important and the limits are important.
Okay. Are there any particular resources you would refer them to?
Well, I think that, you know, you can always get professional help if you're feeling inadequate to really make a difference with your child, whether that child is feeling bullied or is the bully. That I think that, you know, I would totally encourage people, parents, to get assistance. And there are, you know, you can get professional psychological assistance. You can, there are a lot of organizations that you can access that are, you know, give resources of, you know, ideas of what to do, what you can do. And so I think, you know, you could even, whoops, I don't know if you can hear that. There's a doorbell in the background. Right, sorry about that.
Yeah. That's all right. Go on.
Yeah. Yes, and so I think that, you know, even just going to the social worker or the psychologist in the school or in the that area for the school, it would be a very easy step to take that wouldn't cost you any money.
Right.
And to talk with them about it and engage them to be a support and an advocate for the child. I mean, it's just important to do something. It's
right.
Really important to do something. I think that when kids feel that they can get away with bullying or that they are being bullied and nobody's doing anything, then the victim starts to internalize the
that's
feeling.
Right.
Yeah, that I'm the problem. I'm the blame.
It's me.
There's
it's
something
my...
wrong. Yeah, and that is very harmful long term.
Okay. Well, we have maybe 3 minutes, but I wanted to talk a little bit about your new book, Goodbye, Hurt, and Pain.
Right?
Yes. I wanted to talk. And, you know, indeed, I really need to get you back just so we can talk about it exclusively. Because what I got out of the book was that really you're talking about stress and stress-related issues. And I thought, you know, parents and adults and all of those who listen can benefit from us talking about this. But I thought we'd take a couple minutes just for you to kind of give us a synopsis or an overview on stress and your suggestions as to how to handle it. I know you have a technique called the REM technique.
Correct. Yes, REM, standing for...
Not R-E-M, rapid eye movement, but R-I-M.
Right, exactly. So it stands for regenerating images in memory.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a simple way to access whatever kind of stress or pain or hurt has gotten stuck in the body and now become invisible, yet it's still affecting us.
Mm-hmm.
And so when emotion is stuck in the body, it can't be unstuck by just talking about it. And we know that neurologically, and all the new neuroscience really supports that. So using a body-centered way or technique to really access that emotion in the body is very helpful, and it's actually quite simple. And in the book, I tell lots of stories of what it looks like of real people who have had amazing results when doing this, and then also give the neuroscience, and then practice activities so that the reader can really experience trying this with themselves or with others, like it's even for a book group.
A group
of parents would be, you know, very...
That's why I brought it up, because we've been talking about parents, and I thought it was a good read. And so often you will have resources that you really can't initiate on your own. You know, you're going to have someone help. But this was something that you could read. You know, you could initiate the different changes in behaviors and thought patterns on your own. So I thought it was real beneficial. So at some point, I would like to invite you to come back.
Well, great. I would love that.
Okay.
I would love that.
Thanks a lot. I've been talking with Dr. Deborah Sandella, and we have really been talking about bullies and bullying behavior. To my listening audience, I invite you to tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.